Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing new ideas, concepts, guests. Help you lead a more positively minded life. What's the most confusing thing in the world? What is the single most confusing thing in the world, my friends, besides our government? I would say love. Love without a doubt. Love is the kind of thing that keeps me in business. Yes, we shrinks probably wouldn't exist if it weren't for the fact that people have difficulties in romance. Love. Love is a funny thing. It's a funny thing to understand, too, because people don't have a way of defining love. They say, what is love, you know? And you look for a definition of love. Love is when you share your peanut butter sandwich with somebody. Love is when, you know, and then they have all these cute little kitty things that they send on the internet and a dozen different definitions. And then there's one definition by Heinlein in Stranger in a Strange Land where he said, love is the complete acceptance of another human being for exactly what they are, with no desire to change them, for your own neurotic needs. Well, that fits certain people. People who hate being changed love that quote, because this way they could throw it at somebody if somebody tries to change them. Love is such a funny thing. Can you love a hamburger? Can you love a dog and love your mother and love your wife at the same time? Or can you love all those things? Funny word. So some people have taken to breaking down the word, and today I want to talk about one aspect of love that is one of these. Now, there was a couple, Susan and Clyde Hendrick, who talked about love styles, and they talked about a number of different styles. I'll mention them briefly, and then I'm going to focus on the one called manic love. Yes, today is about manic love. You've all probably had the experience, either coming to you or you going towards somebody else, and we're going to talk about it. Manic love, a very funny, frantic feeling. But let's talk about the different kinds of love. There's a ludus love, ludus, L-U-D-U-S. Did you know that? That's when love is kind of a ludus love, is a love that is played as a game or a sport. It's a conquest. You know, ludus love. I love him, but it's mainly about the conquest. We'll talk about that. There's a storge, S-T-O-R-G-E love, which is an affectionate love that develops from friendship based on similarity. You ever notice there are some people who you're very similar with whom you're very similar, and those people, and you could bond, but then you could bond with somebody who's completely your opposite, right? So, for example, if you're a strong person, and you get together with a strong person, and the two of you get together, it's kind of, it could be a similarity there. If you grew up with somebody as a friend, and then they became your lover, and they became your love object, what a funny word, love object. My love object. He's my other. Other ways we have of referring to it. But anyway, a storge lover is a friendship based on similarities. Then there's a pragma, P-R-A-G-M-A love. That's a love that's driven by the head, not by the heart, and it's undemonstrative. It's like probably like your parents. You know, probably like the way most parents look. It's kind of up in the head and not in the body. And not much touching and not much affection. People who are intellectuals, who love intellectually. And there's agape. Agape is the kind of motherly love, the selfless, altruistic love, the all-giving love. There's eros, which is the passionate and physical and emotional love based on aesthetic enjoyment. you know, stereotypic of romantic love. It's beautiful person to beautiful person. Eros is kind of narcissistic. You know, it's kind of like, I love beauty, you love beauty, the two of us represent beauty. And there's a lot of Eros love that takes place in Hollywood. From it comes the word erotic love, which sounds like it's all sexual, but it's all part of the same thing, you know, what we are when we're together. But more sexual than erotic love is the manic love, mania. This is the highly volatile love, the obsession, the one that's fueled, the one that is fire, regardless of what the other person feels. This is Armand Amel. You find this interesting so far? All right, take a test. How many kinds of love can you name right now? Just try to remember which ones did you remember. Okay, take the test, take the test. One, two, did you get three? Can you get more than two? Here they go, they're taking the test right here in the studio right now. We have one, two, three, four, and here they go again. Eros, we talked about Eros, we talked about Ludus. Did you remember Ludus love? That's the one that you play the game, and we're going to talk about that, Ludus love. Ludus lovers are players, you know. They're more interested in quantity than quality of relationships. The ludic lover wants to have so much, as much fun as possible. Ludic lovers choose their partners by playing the field and quickly recover from breakups because they have backups. You know, you break up, you back up, and you're ludic, right? Ludic lovers generally view marriage as a trap and are most likely of the love styles to commit infidelity. They might view children as a sign of fertility, but if male, a confirmation of your masculinity, so you have children because it's part of the game, you see? And you're part of the winning because now you have children. They address their lovers as babe or hunk. And sex is a conquest or a sport. And they engage in relationships because they see them as a challenge. You know? The advantage of ludic love is its excellent sexual technique. It's got really good sexual stuff going for it. The disadvantage is the likelihood of infidelity. In its extreme form, ludic love becomes promiscuity because ludic love is playing the game. And in playing the game, it's the kind of game where you see the women hanging out with each other talking about the lover that they had, or the men hanging out with each other talking about their other lovers is all part of the game, part of the marriage game, part of the couple game, stepping out, or the new phrase, running. Yes, running is a new phrase that means your partner stepped out on you. See, we had a little transition there. We went from cheated, we changed cheated to stepped out. Hollywood uses step out. They say he stepped out on her, meaning that he went out with Jennifer Lopez. And this is what you read in the Hollywood papers. And then that's called stepping out. And when somebody steps out all the time, they're called running. So I was with her until she started running. Doesn't mean that she was in Gary Null's class. It means that she was, okay. Anyway, typical of this book, Ludus, remember the movie Cruel Intentions or Dangerous Liaisons? That was all kind of a game, kind of love. It was all about the game of it. So let's go on to another type that I had mentioned to you. So I mentioned Ludus lovers. Do you remember Storge? Did you write down Storge? You did write down Storge. Storgic lovers are friends first. It develops gradually out of friendship, and the friendship can endure beyond the breakup of the relationship. Storgic lovers choose their mates based on homogamy. Homogamy. Yes. When's the last time you had a dish of homogamy? Right? Delicious. Homogamy. I used to have it as a kid. Homogamy is just what it sounds like. It's homogeneity. homogamy, and they sometimes cannot pinpoint the moment their friendship turned to love. Now, this is a funny thing, because with a storgic love, you got this person that you're hanging out with, and then one day you turn at them and you say, oh, they look so beautiful. And you kiss them and they kiss you back, and you go to bed and you seal the deal. It's over. You've moved from friends to lovers. How did that happen? Well, there's a secret to this. We, in the world of shrinkdom, have usually find that there's an association between when a storgic love turns into an erotic love, and it turns in usually this something else going on, like the person just got fired, or the person's father died, or something happens, and you open a need spot in your body. So here you have this best friend who you've never been lovers with, and you have this best friend, and you break up with your other girlfriend, and there's a little opening to the heart. And that's where you slip in. Or maybe your dog dies. Sorry to say, I don't take that lightly. Dead dogs are very difficult to deal with. But your dog dies and your heart aches, and you look outside yourself, and what do you find? There's your old storgic buddy. Hey, buddy, want a storge? You lay down, you kiss, you hug, you touch each other. Romance. Good example of that in the movies was When Harry Met Sally. Remember that? Or in Love and Basketball. That other movie, Love and Basketball, yeah. Okay, then there's pragma love. Now, pragmatic lovers, just what it sounds like. They come from pragma. No, pragmatic lovers are practical. Pragmatic lovers think rationally and realistically about their expectations in a partner and select them by comparison shopping or a shopping list love. So, in other words, you have three suitors and you go, well, he's got broad shoulders, he's got a good job, and he's got a nice family. And you check it off as many as you can, and that's the one you choose to be your partner because of pragmatism. Because it's practical, because it's pragmatic lovers want to find value in their partners and ultimately want to work with their partner to reach a common goal. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Pragmatic lovers will avoid infidelity to avoid adverse consequences. You know, I mean, there's nothing, we're being practical here. What good is to have an infidelity? Passion doesn't matter. We're in our brains. We're intellectually matching. We carefully weigh the costs and rewards of this relationship. We view sex as a reward or as a means of procreation, both. You know, it's nice to have sex. It's nice to have babies. And babies are both potential liabilities and potential assets, and you think about it that way. Yes, you probably are one of those pragmatics out there. The advantage of pragmatic love is practicality and realism. You're in the what looks like real world, but unfortunately, I hate to lay it on you, it's not the real world after all. The real world is not who gets a bigger house, who has a bigger car, who has a prettier family, who goes to the best school. That's not the real world. That's the unreal world. But as far as that, if that were the definition of the real world, pragmatic relationships fit in best. The disadvantage, you don't get touched. You don't get stroked. There's a lack of emotion. In a way, pragmatism is a form of prostitution. You're giving it away. You're giving yourself away for a reward. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Hey, you didn't know all this about love, did you? Well, it's just one form of looking at it, but it's fun. We're leading up to something. Agape. Agape. From the Greek word agape. It is Greek. Agapic. Agapic. Agapic love is self-sacrificing, all-encompassing love. It is the typical mama loves you because I love you I give you everything. Agapic love is often spiritual or religious people. They view their partners as a blessing, and they wish to take care of them. They wish to take care of them. They want to. Nothing makes them feel better than taking care of them. Agapic lovers will remain faithful to their partners to avoid causing their partners pain, and will often wait patiently for their partners after a breakup. Marriage and children are sacred trusts, and sex is a gift between the two people. Agapic love is unconditional. Agapic lovers eventually grow to feel that they've been taken advantage of and feel that they've been used because they give so much, and they give and they give and they give and they give and they give. And then when they turn around and they found out the other guy was not being agapic, but he was being storgic or ludus, right? You get angry. You get upset. The advantage of agapic love is its generosity. It's giving. It's, you know, I think we all love to give. I think part of being a member of this existential universe is the flow of energy and stuff that comes into you and goes out of you. So part of the advantage of being in a relationship with somebody is that you give and get, you give and get, you give and get, you give and get. It flows through you. Now, you don't have to give from the same person you get. You know, you could give at work, for example. You could do something nice for people at work. And then you go home and your mate is there and they give to you. And this flow of energy opens up. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful to be able to give. What a great gift. In Agape, you give, but you give so selflessly that you don't watch out for yourself in some way, and you eventually expect that you're going to get this love back of the same kind, the same dedication. But in an agape kind of love, usually it's one-sided. One great giver, and the other one is a taker, a receiver. A kind of classic of agape love was in the Passion of Christ, right? Remember the love of Christ? It was selfless. It was I give everything, I give all. In Penelope, in the Odyssey, right? Or the Gift of the Magi by O. Henry. That kind of stuff. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. We're talking about different styles of love, and now we're coming to the hottest style. The style, the one style, the thing called manic love. What is manic love? What is it? Well, I've been focusing on I didn't mention Eros love, did I? Yes, I did. I've been focusing on manic love because I'm interested in the condition called bipolar disorder. Because part of my psychological training has been in learning to diagnose and understand people. And what I do and what I skilled at and what I teach and supervise and what the people around me do is they look at the different mental conditions that come our way. Now, you know, people come your way and they come to you with different kinds of problems, and you have to understand where's their mind coming from? What's this like for them? What's it like up in that brain of yours? What's it like to be you? That's my question I ask all the time when I see somebody functioning. What's it like to be you? What's it like to be walking around the way you walk around with your belief system, with your fears? So we have categories, general categories, you know. Believe it or not, they're not as easy as loony or not loony. But we have categories in our own mind that kind of says the same thing. This person's in reality, this person's not in reality, this person's depressed. Well, if they're depressed, subheading, what kind of depression is it? Is it a chronic depression? Is it a reactive depression? Is it a bipolar depression? And our minds, the advantage of going with somebody who goes to school is that they could help sort it out for you. And once they help sort it out, they know how to approach it, because therapy only works if you know what you're therapizing. You know, if you don't know anything about therapy, and let's say you're a body worker, and you do body work, and you're very good at body work, but you don't understand the human mind. And the person is coming in, but you have one system that you use for everybody, and one person's got a bad arm, and the other person has a bad toe. Wouldn't you treat them differently? Well, the more you know about the human body, the more differently you would treat those two. But if you treat everybody the same way, you're sometimes going to just be trying to press out a carbon copy, but it's not going to work. So getting to know the depths of the human mind, that's kind of the skill that we have to develop, because that's what we do for a living, and the skill I'd like you to develop, which is why you listen to The Positive Mind. Because The Positive Mind is about giving you as much information as possible about the human mind. Now, manic love. I want to teach you about this. Manic love is a funny feeling because, you know, one day you could be totally depressed and the next day you feel actively and alive and in love. Now, in love. First, we're going to talk about manic. Mania. Excessive involvement in pleasurable activities that have a high potential for painful consequences. Get that phrase? Excessive involvement in pleasurable activities that have a high potential for painful consequences. For example, if I was a real estate agent and I saw somebody coming along and I was trained in psychology, and I saw that that person was manic, if I would see from their hyperactivity, from their restlessness, from the way they talk, and I understood they were manic, I'd know, number one, I'm going to sell them a house. I may even sell them two. Because they're a fish. A manic person is a fish for spending because they don't consider the consequences for what they do. So they come at you with a lot of positive energy. Oh, I love this house. Oh, this house is wonderful. Oh, it's fantastic. Right? And the more you see it, the more superlatives you see, the more you know you could take advantage of this person, which is what not all agents, but I'm sure many salespeople think. Car salesmen, you know. It's what they think, and we blame them for being deceptive. But what they're doing is they're exploiting the weaknesses of the people who come in. So a person who is hypomanic, it's called, meaning in a manic phase that's really all the way up at the top, has an edge to it. They have kind of an inflated sense of self. It's like a grandiosity. They feel like they're walking through the earth and they are the king of the world. They'll even say that sometimes. They've got a lot of what I call talkitation. Talkitation is very talkative. They have a talkitative disorder. A talkitative disorder is they just don't stop talking. You know people like that? Just talk, 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 talk. Right? Okay. Their thoughts are very racy. They rush through. They see things. They move on from subject to subject. But they have an ability to focus their energies. They can go into single goal-directed activity, especially around sex. You know, if they hunger for something, if they hone in on something, they're going to go for it with twice the energy that anybody else would have because this hypomanic energy is so energetic. It's like, you know, somebody, you know, like you sat on a lightning rod or something. It's like, zoom, you're filled with energy. Hypomanic people are coming towards you. We're talking about buying houses. This is the people, these are the people who, again, no consequences. They don't know consequences for their behaviors. And we're going to relate this to love, hypomanic love. The business investments, these are the people who get killed in business. Hypomanic people, they get killed because they make investments because they don't have a regulator, you know. They just go over the top, so they buy stocks and they lose money. They get a tip, they get an idea, they go over the top. They, you know, sell the farm, they'll race, they'll gamble. Risk is a very big factor. They love risk. They love it. They just go in there thinking they have an edge. I am sure I could guarantee you that there would be no casinos if there weren't hypomanic people, because they go in there and they go in focused, ready to make a win. They're going to stay at it and stay at it and stay at it. They have buying sprees. They have buying investments. And stocks, you know, is just like that. You buy stocks, even though it sounds like it's a financial decision, it's really a gambling decision. And then they have sexual indiscretions. They have sex, sexual focus. And when you're hypomanic and you have a sexual focus, nothing else will work for you. It's like a buying spree. You've got to satisfy it. You've got to keep it going. Now, here's the beauty of it is, on the other side of a hypomanic love, a person who is so focused on you is possessive, they're jealous, they are obsessed about you. It's kind of a crazy love. But you know, if you've never had it, when it comes towards you, you welcome it. You feel like, oh, finally I found somebody who cares about me. If you've been deprived as a child and a hypomanic love comes in your direction, you just feel like you've been blessed by God. You know, it feels terrific. Of course, it's not about you, but you don't know that. You think it is about you. They're focused on you, but it really is about them. It's what am I going to do with my energy? Where am I going to put it? I'm going to put it all on you. So they call you up, so they focus on you, so they pay attention to you. So they keep all their focus on you at all times. Hypomanic love becomes erotic. It becomes a fascination. It becomes, I think about you all the time. I touch myself and think about you. It becomes something sexual. It becomes on every minute of the day. It can fill your time. Along with hypomanic love comes sleeplessness. You can't really sleep. It's one of the signs you have. And I want to talk about this a little bit today because it really is very confusing, you know, because you're a person who's on the other side of it and you're finally getting positive attention from somebody. But something inside you says back off, and for a reason. So when we come back from our break today, I'm going to take your calls and I want to talk about your love. The loves you've had, the agape, the hypomania, the different styles of love, the eros, the sturgic, the cream cheese and sturgic, and all the other ones that you have coming in your direction, or that you felt. If you ever felt a hypomanic love, it's amazing. It's possessive. It takes you over. You can't think about anything else. And sometimes that's a real delight, and we'll talk about why and how that crosses over. Because usually the person who goes into a hypomanic love is somebody who was recently depressed. It's like a catapult. It's like you vault out of your depression onto this high space of total loving. And, of course, you're teetering at the edge of a precipice with this love because you're going to fall all the way down when it gets when it's not requited. So we'll be back with you in a little bit. Play you a little music, get you settled in. You can make your calls at 212-209-2900. We'll be back with you in a few minutes. the Gotan project, G-O-T-A-N project, from the Hotel Costas number 9 by Stephanie Papanak. My telephone number here, 212-209-2900. You're taking your calls talking about love. Love itself. Yes, how many different ways have you loved? Have you been confused by the love you have? Do you have a storgic love? Have you had an kind of love? Manic love. You ever been on the giving or the getting side of manic love? It's amazing. It's an amazing amount of energy. And you know, if you're somebody who's just finding a plus for your minus, that's what I kind of call it. You find a plus for your minus. This is one of the few expressions. I give this one to Bill Astwood. Dr. Bill Astwood coined this phrase. And he said, that's what happens in life. You're walking along and you feel like there's something missing in your life. That's your minus. And somebody comes along and they provide you with a plus, and you find a plus for your minus. So it's got the perfect reception. And that's what happens to many people. You find a plus for your minus. Now, that may be what the best definition of love is, finding a plus for your minus. Whatever you're missing, you find in another person. It always seems to match that way. You know, you're missing joy and you find somebody gives you joy. You're missing sex, you find somebody who gives you sex. You're missing affection, you find somebody who gives you affection. All of these things are possible. 212-209-2900. We're talking about this, and we're talking about what happens with manic love. You know, now one of the other things about hypomania that you should know is that risk is a big deal. Everything is risky, you know, you risk. Because it seems very funny in a hypomanic love or any hypomanic condition, any condition where the person's all the way up there on the manic level, they don't think about tomorrow. They only think about today. So it seems risky, but it's not. A hypomanic thing would be, I believe I could jump off this building and fly, you know? But like the man who jumped off the Empire State Building said on his way down, so far so good. So far. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of those calls, Michael. Thank you. Hi there, you're on the air. Well, I know there's a call there.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi, hold on. Hello?
I'll hold on. Can you lower your radio all the way? Shut it off.
Am I on the air?
You are on the air.
Okay. I'm actually a hypomanic person right now. I've been diagnosed by 2 separate psychiatrists, actually. Mm-hmm. And I'm supposed to be on medication, but I'm not taking any of it right now, and I currently smoke.
And you don't want to take the medication, right?
I'm going to if I have to, because I don't want to get the depressive side.
Yeah,
I've
that's for the depression,
so
but how about controlling the manic side? You don't want to control the manic side, right?
Well, not really. And yes, I've been told that a lot of manic people don't want to come down.
But tell me about the good news about being a manic, since you're a person who's hypomanic. What's so great about this?
I was manic last year. I ended up in a psych ward, actually, last summer.
Yeah.
The good things are that you have a lot of energy. You're always, you know, most of the time you're in a good mood. If you do get in a bad mood, it's for, like, you know, a few minutes. It's very short-lived. And, you know, that's basically it.
How about love and sex?
What?
How about love and sex?
Last summer, you know, before I went to Israel last summer, and before I went there, I was 20, I only slept with one person, and when I went there, I slept with, you know, a large amount of men, you know, which was very out of my character, you know, and I had done some harder drugs before I went to Israel, so I thought it was the harder drugs. I didn't even know anything about, you know, bipolar and mania. I was never, you know, diagnosed with it before last summer. So, you know,
so you found yourself when you were in Israel, you said, sleeping with a lot of different guys, having sex with a lot of them. What was that energy like? What was it like? It just happened to appear, or did you desire it?
No, it just, you know, it happened to appear, and there was, like, different changes, you know, like, before last summer, I never, you know, I wasn't a good dancer, like, I was just average, and then last summer, you know, I'd go out a lot, and I danced differently. I had, like, the way I acted is I wasn't even really aware of people. Like, when I was talking to them, I was just talking, and I didn't, just as long as somebody was listening type of thing, and also I felt like I, after the fact, like I had really no conscience. I was like a child, like, you know, somebody would, you know, I'd be doing something wrong and I didn't care at all, you know, and I had no understanding of what I was doing.
Do something wrong, meaning like you could sleep with your sister's, brother.
Funny. No. Sleep with different guys, and I thought it was, you know, I thought it was funny that I was so open sexually all of a sudden, you know. And I had no conscience in that way. And, like, also safety-wise, I was like a child. You know, children are never scared. They'll jump from a high place and not understand that it's dangerous, you know.
Curiously, if you don't mind my asking, during those sexual escapades, did you enjoy the sex?
Yes, I did enjoy it. And that's why I had some confusion after, because I wasn't, you know, happy with myself that I behaved that way. But at the same time, I enjoyed it, so I was confused, and actually I went to rehab after the mania and the drugs. Hold on just a minute. After the mania and the drugs. So, and in rehab, you know, I recall being confused, and they did put me on a large amount of medication, and in this rehab, I went it very quickly, actually. And I haven't been on medication since, and this has been, like, you know, 10 months ago. But
so the danger of the upside of the mania, now that you're aware of it, and you don't want to take medication to control it, because what people do is, by the way, were you taking medication to get you out of your depression?
No, it was to get me down from my mania. That's when they started putting me on medication. I never really had a depressive. After I went down off this medication, I was slightly depressed. I wouldn't call myself majorly depressed at all. And the psychiatrist, they did say that if I would have the depressive side, it would be very slight, which it was pretty slight. And right when I came back from Israel, which I went to rehab in Israel also, I really went back to myself, and I blame part of me being a little depressed based basically because I couldn't communicate well with the people I was with because they mostly spoke Hebrew, which, you know, I didn't know Hebrew so well. And we were in meetings all day, and I needed a translator, which was, it was quite, you know, it was frustrating.
What's your name?
My name is Gina.
Gina?
Yeah. And
so, Gina, let me ask you, are you the way you're floating now is you're saying, okay, I know I'm in this hypomanic phase. I know I could be very talkative. I know I could be all of these things. I know I'm speeding and it's hard to keep my focus, but I feel basically good.
Right,
and therefore, I'm not going to take anything that's going to bring me down.
Right. Well, I go to work every day. I do what I have to do. I do what I'm supposed to do. So as long as it's not affecting my life to the extent where I can't go to work, I can't have, you know, simple or, you know, any relationships, at that point, then I would have to think about going on medication. But right now I feel safe enough. The only reason I would go on medication is because I am nervous about getting depressed. I don't want the depressive. I never really got it yet, so I don't know if I ever will. You never know, you know. So I'm nervous, and that's the only reason why my stress.
Well, let me ask you this, Gina, wouldn't it be possible, imagine, even right now as I talk to you,
right?
Imagine that you could take exactly what you're doing, right? In fact, let's do this real fast. Count from 1 to 10 real fast. I'll show you.
In my mind?
No, say it out loud.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Okay, now I'm going to say to you, take that and tone it down to half its space. Half the time, okay? And say it a little louder, okay?
Oh, do it, say it faster?
Say the number slower.
Slower. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Good. Now, I notice you did that all on kind of one breath.
Mm-hmm.
So now what I'd like you to do is do the same thing, but do it on an exhale and breathe in between.
Okay, one. Two. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's a little annoying, actually.
That's right, because it's annoying, right? All right, now, you do this with me. You're going to do it. You're going to do fine. Now you're going to do it real slow, and you're just going to count to 5. Real slow. Real slow. Slow the world. Just do it on purpose because you're powerful, because you could do it. I want you to go just count from 1 to 5.
Okay.
And do it with power. Don't do it. I mean, do it like you feel like you're in control of the clock, like you're the one who makes the hands move. Go ahead. Let's go.
1.
Yes.
2.
Mm-hmm.
3. 4. 5.
Mm. Tell me about that last feeling.
Wait, hold on a second. We're breaking up. Hello?
Yeah, what was that last feeling like?
The it was just a little annoying.
The final one.
5?
The one, yeah, the 5, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I'm happy that I finished counting.
Mm-hmm. So you could go back to the fast speed?
Should I go back to the fast speed
No,
now?
No, so that you could go back to the fast speed. Did you like the slower speed? Was
no.
anything about it positive?
No, I was looking around. The way I made it that it was easier for me to slow down is I'm driving right now and I was just looking around at the buildings. After every number that I said, so I was actually more aware of my surroundings.
Is there something good about that?
Yeah, there is, because then right now I'm kind of racing a little bit, so I'm not really aware of my surroundings so much. And when
well, that's
I have
the
to
idea.
Slow down,
you know, whether you do it through medication or you do it through training,
right.
The idea is if you have the advantage of the joy of a hypomanic state, you can train that into a level of consciousness that is a superior awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways that they try to treat it is, of course, is they try to moderate it. They try to bring it down. One of the things that we like to do instead is to take it and convert it into a higher form of consciousness, which is another possibility. And that gives you just as much power without taking away any of the energy.
Right, because what the medication did to me is turn me into a zombie.
A zombie. I knew the word's
going
to be zombie. Sure.
To take the medication now, and that's
sure.
why I went to
so the other way is to just, in your own mind, and I'm going to be going, but in your own mind, what I want you to try to think of throughout your day is moving in halftime, moving in slow motion, and you'll see your actual mind will expand. You'll see things and hear things that you never heard before, and it'll be joyous. It'll be a positive thing. Just as an experiment, you go to a movie, move in slow motion. You go downstairs, move in slow motion, and get the kick out of it. Once you train your mind to do that, you won't be as much of a slave to the manic energy.
Right.
All right? Thanks for calling in, Gina.
Okay, thank you so much. Bye.
Sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, listen, thank you for that, because I'm bipolar, and I was under lithium therapy for over 30 years, which prevented me from writing, from painting, from accessing my own creativity in its full value. Prior to that, I had a book published by Putnam's. I was working in the music business. I was an assistant professor. I was a flourishing, creative person, and I had a breakdown when my father died, and my doctor said, go see a therapist, and they said, go take lithium, and once they tell you to take lithium, then they all take you to lithium. Finally,
oh, no, they don't anymore. They
well,
used to.
Then they try to get you to take Depakote.
No, not any longer.
Oh, uh-huh. But that's not my recent experience, sir.
Yes, right. How recent?
I would say 2 weeks ago.
Huh. Interesting.
All
interesting.
Right. On the 11th of September, when I was hospitalized at Mount Sinai with an irregular heartbeat due to anxiety because I'd been told by a renal doctor, that's your kidneys, that I had to stop taking lithium. It was damaging my kidneys, but I must not stop unless I was under the supervision of a psychiatrist. I follow doctor's orders, otherwise I don't go to doctors. I then proceeded for 6.5 weeks to secure a psychiatrist in New York City, which I was unable to do because I'm on Medicaid, and psychiatrists do not accept Medicaid.
Okay, now wait, I got to get to the bottom of this because there is so many parentheses in here, you know.
Sorry.
It's okay. So
I'll answer your questions. I'll speak when you ask me.
No, well, you're saying part of the reason you called was because you were glad to hear that there's a way of dealing with the mania.
That's exactly what I'm doing now.
Yeah, and there's a way of dealing with it that are other ways other than. And you know, the people who use meditation as a form of trying to control that energy, you're trying to get that energy together. Now, of course, the drugs all have their side effects. But it's very hard to do focus and, you know, did you ever get a massage ever?
No.
How come?
I have no money. That's why I couldn't get a massage.
No, wait a minute now. There's got to be a massage school somewhere in the world that could use you as their guinea pig,
yes,
you know what I mean?
I'm 78 and handicapped. I'm sure they'd be glad to see me.
Well, actually, you know, they would be glad to see you.
Really?
Yes, actually, they would be glad to see you.
Including my visible psoriasis.
Sure. Sure, because there's nothing more in the world that will work for you, I promise, than human touch. Human touch can take your entire condition and convert it.
Can I just finish my story a little bit?
Okay, we've got to go, though. I've got to...
All right, I've been off lithium since the 11th of September.
Yes.
I'm not under any psychotropic medication. I'm under the supervision of a psychiatrist at Mount Sinai who said, well, you sound okay. I'll see you in 6 weeks. I am using my manic energy, which I can perceive when it arrives as a kind of internal rush. I immediately stop. I lie down. If I can't control it, my doctor gave me a medication called metobromate.
Mm-hmm.
It's an anti-anxiety medication. It works perfectly for me. It doesn't put me to sleep, and it lets me continue to write. I have been able to write creatively and to draw pictures with what was my formerly tremorless hand since the 11th of September. I feel I had over 30 years stolen out of my life.
What's your name?
Liza Williams.
Liza, I want to thank you so much for calling in, because you're teaching Gina that there is a way of doing it, you know, as well. And I want to thank you very much. Congratulations.
Well, I want to thank you for saying there is a way, because aside from the psychiatrist, which I recently saw at Mount Sinai, there were no other psychiatrists who ever suggested there was another way. And I became really toxic to lithium, and I think that's how I hurt my kidneys. In any case, I said, I want to integrate my manic depression into my normal self because I was born with it. My mother was bipolar. I accept it as part of my personality, and I will deal with it in the same way as I deal with my psoriasis.
Thank you. Thank you, Liza.
Is that helpful?
Very helpful. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
And you know, there's a whole bunch of people, famous musicians. Mozart was clearly hypomanic, and a bunch of other people. And think of Mozart. Yeah, you know, there it is. There's that hypomania was there the entire time. There are people who take it and they convert it into one thing or another. The difficulty becomes when you try to set up shop based on the energy of the hypomania. And, you know, and then we're talking about hypomanic love, which I may have to just continue tomorrow because it's there's so much to it. And the boards are lit with telephone calls. So we may have to do more. But let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hi there. Hello there. Here we go. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Turn off my radio.
Sure.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, you're on the air. Your name is?
You mind if I don't say?
No.
Okay, great. Well, maybe my case is a little boring, but I was thinking about the different kinds of love you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I seem to have storage, pragma, with a little bit of agape.
Yeah, isn't that cute? You know, you should be able to send a You know, and it's the way you love. You love that way. You know, I think people should wear shirts, and each one should be like a little emblem, you know, like they have military shirts. How do you love? You know, I love a manic. You get a little red signal. And so you've got the three of them. And how do you experience that, and who do you experience that with?
Well, I was thinking primarily that I experienced it with my wife, but I would say that probably I experienced those loves with lots of people.
It's the way you love. So do you love a lot with your mind? I mean, does a lot of it involve your mind and thinking rather than just the wild passions?
Well, yes, but I guess I didn't finish saying I've also experienced ludus and I think Eros, though you didn't...
I didn't go into it.
You didn't go into it, but I think that. And then, I don't think really manic, but wherever Eros shades into it.
Well, that's really nicely said. And the Eros, you know, when we think about Eros, we think about it being a loved object, but I really think about narcissism. Eros is more of a focus on the physical beauty, you know, of the other person. And it's, in effect, the love of self. You know, Eros is like it's like Narcissus. It's closely related. I mean, what you're loving is you're loving you, loving the other person,
right.
And it's based on a lot of beauty, and it's kind of nice. But like you said, well, I think you bring up a very good point here because, and I'm sure you don't want to say your name because you probably got about 500 people out there who would recognize you and say, "Oh, I know him. He gave me a little Sturgis, or he gave me a little." But, you know, I think you bring up a good point that we love in all these different ways and that there is no one love. So that when one person turns around to you and says, "Do you love me?" it's very hard to answer that question. Because if you say, "Do you love me Storgic? Do you love me Eros? Do you love me Manic?" you know, you'd probably be able to define it a little better.
Well,
but
I think we could do it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I could be more specific. I would say that from my side to my wife is primarily Storgic. And because but that's how the friendship developed. So we both began with Storgic. But I think hers is more agape type of love.
Yes.
But I mean, I recognize because of the pragma, I guess, that needs to be somewhat balanced because I don't want her to come to regret having given too much, you know?
Yeah. And the way to do that, my friend, is through touch. Make sure there's a lot of physical contact. And I don't mean just sex. I mean touch. Touch with your eyes. Touch with your hands. Touch with your heart. This is Armand Mill. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. for a copy of today's program. You could go to thepositivemind.com and you could listen to it or send it on to somebody else. Or you could send me an email. Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at brainlink.com. Bye-bye, my friends.